would say the post-traumatic growth was spurred by anger. I was angry. I was angry that this happened again. I was angry that we don't talk about it. I was angry that I had to find all of this for myself, find support for myself. I was angry at the United States political system. I was angry.
Welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. Our aim is to help you own your experience. I'm Catherine Mousley.
And I'm Hayley Manning. Today we're joined by Dr. Julie Bindeman. Julie is based in the US in Maryland and is the co-founder of Integrative Therapy of Greater Washington. She specializes in reproductive and maternal mental health and has had two TFMRs herself. She's especially interested in the phenomenon of post-traumatic growth, which is what we're going to be speaking with her about today.
So welcome, Julie. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I guess the burning question is, what is post-traumatic growth?
Quite simply, post-traumatic growth are the lessons that we learn and kind of the phoenix coming from the ashes of a traumatic experience.
And is this something that you always were interested in or knew about as a psychologist, or was this something that came out of your own experiences?
So post-traumatic growth and trauma in and of itself are not really things that we learn about as part of our foundational studies in graduate school. We don't really learn a whole lot about grief and loss or that trajectory. Those are seen a little more as specializations. I think that the round thing I got from graduate school is the idea that from any of our experiences, we grow. So from that, yes, it makes sense to extrapolate that that would not be anything different from a traumatic experience. I think the one piece about post-traumatic growth that's different, and maybe there is an equivalent too, is that we can have growth if we choose to have growth. Growth doesn't just happen. It doesn't just get sprinkled upon us and, oh, look, there's growth. But it's something that we have to work for. We have to own it, and we have to choose it, and we don't necessarily get to decide what it looks like.
Okay.
I was going to say, you have to be quite self-aware as well. It's not like a natural process to be grieving.
I think post-traumatic growth can be seen as part of a natural process if there is awareness after the fact. So it might be that somebody had a grieving process, something else came of it that just felt like it spontaneously changed. And then when they're looking back on it in retrospect, they can say, well, if it hadn't been for this loss, then this wouldn't have happened. And so that might be how they're cluing into post-traumatic growth.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is that it's not necessarily at the moment in time, because I'm quite interested in this, because I believe in post-traumatic growth. I believe that I've gone through or are going through that process, but I also know that it couldn't have happened in the depths of my grief. That this isn't a sort of, you know, hallelujah, rainbows and sparkly things. Like you said, the sort of sprinkling of magic, you know, and it's something really painful, actually, the process. And I had to get to a certain point in my grief before it was even really possible.
And to acknowledge it, isn't it, as well?
Like, yeah.
It's so painful what had to happen, and to acknowledge it afterwards that this led you to a certain place as well.
I
think the hard part of going through any kind of painful experience, and most painful experiences have some kind of grief or loss aspect to it. It might not be around death, but some other kind of grief or loss aspect to it, is that it's through pain that human beings have the opportunity to grow. And that sucks. Do you have to say that?
Like, it's
that
like torture, isn't it?
Sucks.
Like, why?
Like, I'd rather not. Can we just, yeah.
but I think it's kind of like the feeling of happiness or joy. When we're feeling happy or joy, we don't think to hold on to it, right? And it's not until we're feeling sad or angry or frustrated that we long for that happiness and joy. And all of a sudden we can appreciate it. So when we're grieving, that's when we long for that happiness and joy, or even just a neutral. Yeah. And it's when we really can appreciate it. Versus without that other side to it, it's really hard to appreciate. So like the best example I think of in having this concept make sense to people is there's a great Pixar movie called Inside Out. And yes, it's a cartoon, but I think that every human being should watch it. They really depict very well in a way that's understandable how the brain works. And basically part of the movie is talking about how we need our feelings of joy. We need our feelings of anger. We need our feelings of sadness. We need our feelings of fear, disgust, surprise. Surprise is not a character in the movie, but should have been. But those are the core human feelings that we tend to have. And they all have a place and they're all important and they cooperate together. They're not just on an island in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, like, especially after you've been through something really traumatic, I tend to think you hang on to those happy moments or you appreciate them or you feel more gratitude than perhaps wouldn't have done before.
Yes.
But that's a process in itself, isn't it? Because you can't do that at the beginning.
No.
So I want people listening to this to, if they're like a day out of their TFMR or a week out of their TFMR or a year out of their TFMR, you may not feel that right.
Or you feel guilty if you do.
Yeah.
Right. As well.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So this takes time. And I guess, you know, let's bring it to TFMR. You know, where does that fit within it? Because trauma and grief are two separate things.
Yes. And both are included in terminating for medical reasons.
Yes.
That you can't terminate for medical reasons and not have that 1-2 punch of both trauma and grief.
Yeah.
No matter how well it goes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, exactly. So can you just explain what's the difference or what is it? What stands trauma out from grief and grief out from trauma?
Sure. So grief is a normative human process. It is something that human beings are programmed to go through. And in grief, I like to think of it as a pendulum, so that we can't just stay in grief, that occasionally the pendulum has to switch. So we're either feeling neutral or maybe we giggle at something or maybe, you know, we have relief or we are not thinking about the grieving thing. And then, of course, the pendulum flows back and forth. I wish this was not only a podcast so people could see my hand movements, but and with that back and forthness, we come to an equilibrium over time. And I can't tell you what time that is, whether that is a week, a month, 2 years, 6 years, whatnot. What is different from grief is trauma. So trauma occurs because it is an unexpected event that engages our really primal part of our nervous system. So typically in trauma, when a traumatic event occurs, our brain reacts with one kind of solution. Either we fight, we flee, or we freeze. Those are sort of the three human things that we do in order to try to get us out of danger. And it's not even human. It's a mammalian. It's a reptilian thing that we do. Yeah.
It's a form of protection as well, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Like survival.
Right. And the idea is, can we inoculate ourselves in the moment so that we can survive that traumatic incident, whatever that trauma might be? And so when we are now out of that dangerous moment, what often happens where it becomes trauma versus just experience is that our memory of it isn't able to process like normal memories process. So it's like it gets stuck in the inbox. And so anything that might emotionally be similar, visually be similar, auditorily be similar, similar smells, similar tastes. We've processed that all in this memory package, which gets stuck in our inbox. And so anytime we might have a smell, a taste, a sound, a feeling, it's going to re-trigger that package. And that's what trauma is when we get stuck within this memory chain because the chain can't process.
Okay. Do you think as well, like there's an added complication to this with TFMR about feeling able to grieve or being allowed to grieve because of the stigma of, I guess, the event itself?
So I think it varies for different people. I think some people right after it go right into grief, and then that trauma piece comes up later. And for others, it's right into trauma. And so that grief piece feels inaccessible. Some people do it at the same time, that it's grief and trauma. And so it just feels like a really big old mess, and even more difficult to manage all the feelings that come up with.
Or it's delayed sometimes, I think, for some people. Be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's so hard, what we're sort of all getting at, is that as much as I would love to be able to say to people, okay, so if you terminate for medical reasons, here are the 5 steps. First, it's this, and it lasts this long. And then it's unfortunately, it's just not that, as much as we all wish for it to be that.
Yeah. And then you've got like external factors of people going, oh, you should be over it by now, or you shouldn't be doing this, or you should be grieving this way, or it's just a pregnancy or something like that, just a baby. Right.
It was just a clump of cells. What's the big deal?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, what you've painted there really well, Julie, thank you for describing both grief and trauma, is that they are both big events, both take whatever time they take, and they may also need sort of outside help. I mean, somebody, especially with trauma, I mean, grief, maybe not so much. Maybe you've got the support systems in place. You're able to sort of do this pendulum swing and find your equilibrium relatively, I don't want to say easily, that's not quite the right word, because it's never easy, but you're able to do it on your own. But trauma, organic, that's a good word, organically. But trauma, this stuck memory package, is that something that people can do organically, or does it tend to need some kind of outside help?
So I am of the belief that most human beings in their lived experience trauma. And whether that is a kind of trauma that other people could easily say, oh yeah, that sounds traumatic.
Whether, like a war zone or, a natural hurricane. Disaster. Exactly.
Absolutely. Yes. Or whether it is something that the individual experiences traumatic. And I think it's that second part that becomes really tricky for people, because there's not necessarily the buy-in from others that it was trauma, and there doesn't need to be, because trauma is absolutely at the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. Trauma does not get defined by somebody else. Trauma gets defined by you and your circumstance. So most human beings are trauma survivors in some kind of way, whether that is relational trauma, and that could be because parents were just disengaged or even outright neglectful. But what I'm trying to say is that it doesn't have to be something that is quote unquote major.
Yeah.
It can be something that is a little more run of the mill, and that doesn't negate that it doesn't have a traumatic impact. And most of the time, we don't even know if it has a traumatic impact until we get older and we start to try to have relationships. And oftentimes when we have a series of failed relationships, that it's hard to relate, or whether it's a relationship with a job that we just can't hold down a job, or we can't make friends or keep friends, or we can't have a romantic entanglement that lasts. These can be symptoms that there is some kinds of traumatic memories that haven't been worked through. And I would say that it's important when your past and your present collide, and they continue to collide, to have somebody assist you in working it through, because it becomes a blind spot for us.
It's also about being validated, though, that trauma being validated.
Yeah.
Because if you're obviously it's invalidated and dismissed, that just can really cement like old past trauma as well, can't it?
Yeah.
And what I'm also sort of made me think is that, so if somebody's had a TFMR and then life continues, this is something that if the trauma hasn't been worked through, it could really come back and bite you later.
Yep. So particularly around a subsequent pregnancy.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Yep. And again, most people prior to TFMR have experienced some kind of trauma, whether they know it or not. And so oftentimes, whatever has gotten blocked with that previous trauma gets packaged in the TFMR. Yeah. And so whatever those negative beliefs we hold about ourselves get packaged in with that TFMR. Okay. So if it's the belief of I am bad, or I don't deserve good things, or I am unlovable, all of those could be negative beliefs that we already hold about ourselves that then get exacerbated by this particular traumatic event.
Yes. And that almost shapes your personality, doesn't it, in a way?
Absolutely.
And then it chooses your actions, and then those actions obviously have consequences, and then that path you go down all due to this. I mean, it's just mind-blowing, isn't it, when you like start to unpick it all.
And I'm not trying to say that anybody chooses TFMR. Like, nobody goes down the path of pregnancy being like, I really hope that there's some kind of catastrophic thing in my pregnancy, and so I get to terminate. So I'm not trying to make that equivalency here, that whatever past trauma we might have, that somehow links to TFMR in the event. What I'm saying is that in our emotional experience of the two, they tend to find one another and coalesce and bond. But one and the other, there's no other relation.
I think, exactly. It's all about this sort of, what I'm imagining is this kind of like snowball, really.
Yes.
And you've accumulated, and you're accumulating, and they just like, almost like snow attracted to each other. They keep sticking to each other. So, you know, it becomes a bigger thing. And so that can make it complicated to sort of untangle it. But let's get back to post-traumatic growth, because, you know, this is, I think, what maybe makes post-traumatic growth very powerful. And I'd really like to know how you got interested in it.
So I became interested in post-traumatic growth before even knowing what it was, more again, organically, because of my own experiences. And just really briefly, after having a healthy child, I had a miscarriage, and then I had two terminations for medical reasons for the same kind of brain anomaly that is undetectable up until the middle of pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So that in of itself was its own experience, packaged as three consecutive losses together. And so there was certainly an isolation that I felt because of that. And after the first time, I did a pretty good job of seeking out friends and support. Didn't know very many people who had terminated, or if they had, it was an earlier abortion. It happened when they were 18, 19, and it was really different. Or people who had miscarriages. After my miscarriage, I found so many who had miscarriages. And after my miscarriage, I would say the seed of post-traumatic growth started, where I remember being wheeled into the operating room for a D&C. And I remember saying to my OB, well, I guess I'll have to expand my specialization to not only be postpartum issues, but also to be around pregnancy loss. And so that was kind of the germination for it. And of course, at that moment in time, I didn't even imagine that pregnancy loss could look different than a miscarriage. I didn't imagine about stillbirths. I didn't imagine about terminations for medical reasons, ectopic pregnancies, chemical pregnancies, failed embryo transfers, all of the other kinds of losses that can be there.
Yeah.
So that would be, I would say, for me, the sort of seed of it. After the first abortion, I felt, again, I had support, but I felt a little lost. I was like, okay, well, I guess what I'll do is I'll really think about this as a professional specialization, but I didn't do a whole lot more with it because I was really in the grief piece of it. And so I became interested in grief and loss, but it's hard to become interested in it as a theoretical, philosophical discipline when you are experiencing that pendulum, you know, when one moment you want the earth to swallow you up, and the next moment, like, things feel fine, or at least as fine as they can be. So it wasn't really until after my second termination that I would say the post-traumatic growth was spurred by anger. I was angry. I was angry that this happened again. I was angry that we don't talk about it. I was angry that I had to find all of this for myself, find support for myself. I was just angry.
Yeah.
I was
rage.
I was angry at the United States political system for even making this. And I felt the consequence of that in my abortion, but I was angry. And so I remember being like 2 days post termination with my laptop at home, and I started Googling, and I found the National Abortion Federation, and I reached out to them, and I'm like, I just had two terminations. They happened in the second trimester. Use me. I want to tell my story. Like, I feel like I can do that. I fortunately have enough privilege in the United States being a cisgender white woman that, you know, I can do this. And many people don't feel that kind of privilege. I live in a state that's very protective of abortion. So I didn't feel like I would be in danger in the same way that other pregnant people in my country might feel. And so they did. They're like, great. Will you be part of this campaign? Can we use your story? Tell us your story. And we want to, you know, we were getting into election season. And so Planned Parenthood reached out to me and they said, hey, we want to use your story and do a video shoot of you to help with some of the swing states around abortion. And so I was used for that. And then just political opportunities where I was able to testify, where I was able to just really shine a light. And at every time I could, I would share my story. And that when I talk about it, I feel like I do the most honoring to my babies by sharing my story, by not letting the stigma swallow me.
The other thing I'm hearing as you speak is the power of that.
Yes.
It's the honoring of your babies, but it's the taking back of some control and agency of what has happened to you.
It's right. It is my story. It's not how other people want my story to be. It's not the really neat soundbite of my story, but it's my story. It's why when I tell my story in its entirety, it's not a 2-minute soundbite. It's a journey. My story is a journey when I tell it fully, as it should be. And that is the way I love to tell it. But it's really hard then to adapt that to, okay, I have 3 minutes to testify, or I have a letter I have to submit to Congress, or I'm testifying in front of a state delegation, which I've done several times. And all of these things yield power. The other thing I did simultaneously is I started to read and I started to take coursework to learn about pregnancy loss in a more didactic way. So it's not just, oh, you know what? I'm a psychologist already. I've had pregnancy losses. I know what to do, because my experience is not everyone's experience.
Yeah.
So I basically got 3 years of training in infertility and pregnancy loss and birth trauma, and I continue to do that. But I got a ton of training so that I could truly call this a specialization. And that was the other piece that I did. And then the third piece that I did, which didn't happen until almost a decade later, I'd been in therapy and I had a wonderful therapist who got me through my grief, got me through a lot of it, the rawness of it all, and helped me survive 2 subsequent pregnancies that ended up in living children. And that was wonderful. And then I went back into therapy 3 years ago or so. And it was because I started to really learn about eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So one of the big trauma modules that we get to use, modalities that we use, is EMDR. And so I was training in that, and I decided that I wanted to experience it myself, because in the training, we got a chance to experience it. And I did a little work on my terminations and I saw how powerful it was. Mm-hmm. And so that is also where the growth has come, because that was able to sweep away the cobwebs, if you will, or sweep away the chains that were getting stuck in the behaviors and the choices that I would make, so that I could truly feel free and authentic to the choices that I was making. So that's another piece of it that came later. but a lot of work had been done, not only in therapy, but also in some of these choices, the choice to tell my story. And that's not the right choice for everyone, because for some people, yeah. telling their story is re-traumatizing every single yeah. time mm-hmm. they tell it. And so I don't suggest it as a one size fits all, but for me, it was that, and it was working to support people who are experiencing reproductive trauma.
I think something I was just picking up there was a common theme between maybe all three of us is the anger. I think I was, you know, angry at,
I don't know what you're talking about, Catherine. I got angry.
Don't swear again. God's sake, I have to edit that out. But I remember wanting to tell my story because I was angry at all these people that had to grieve silently. And I think yes. when me and Hayley first met, we were obviously angry at this was kind of put into a corner and not really mentioned as a form of baby loss.
Yes.
And I think yes. a lot of other people who are doing stuff to help others are probably angry at something that then turn that into their own post-traumatic growth.
Yes. Yeah. Angry with a partner for not being the partner they needed yeah. or family for not accepting, or their religious, you know,
yeah, or being silenced by society, or yes. the stigma we face, or
yes,
you know, the judgment. Like some people get so angry at that they have to
yeah.
tell their story, whereas I think other people don't, or they aren't ready to, or they haven't acknowledged that yet.
Or even angry at the baby for not being the baby that they were hoping and wishing yeah. for, to be put in the situation of needing to make this choice.
I think that's really interesting to say that, Julie, because I don't think we hear enough of that kind of possibility. And I think it's a real possibility. Things like being angry with the baby, things like, you know, I felt some relief that I made a decision. So when the decision was made, I'm going to terminate, I felt some relief.
Yes. There. Yes.
And I don't think those sorts, exactly. So I don't think we allow enough, or we feel comfortable enough to say it. So me being able to say, I felt relief, I felt grief, and I felt
right.
anger, and I felt deep sadness about what was happening, but I also felt some relief that I had a decision, you know, and it was made.
I mean, and here's something else that we don't hear a whole lot is, I am not glad I was in that situation ever. I would not wish that situation on anybody. But looking back, I am so glad I had the experience, because yeah. had I not, I wouldn't be who I am today. And yeah. and to be able to make that really closely. So I am so thankful and appreciative to those three babies who had to die in yep. order for me to be who I am today. And that's easy for me to say, because I know what the ending looked like. I'm not in the middle of it. I could not have said that in the middle of it. It's not how I felt in the middle of it. And so to know that our relationship to trauma has the possibility to change,
yeah.
that it doesn't yeah. have to be something that, like, oh my God, I can't think about.
But once you accept it as well, I think yes. it does become a bit easier. Like I often think if he hadn't died, I wouldn't have moved to London. I wouldn't have met Hayley. I wouldn't be doing this podcast. We wouldn't be sitting yeah. here now. We wouldn't be in a different world trying to change things for others.
I Absolutely. Think that this is the paradox, isn't
yeah.
it? And you're right, Julie, when you're in it, when you're right in the midst of the storm, you cannot, it's not even possible, because it's not your reality in right. that moment. So this is very much a post, you know, this is after, and maybe many years after, that you're able to look back and look at the trajectory. And I think it's maybe worth acknowledging that not everybody will feel that as well. Maybe that their trajectory went in a different way that they're looking at and going, my life really fell apart. There's right. you know, relationships break down.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, all sorts of things can happen. People can maybe turn to alcohol or drugs to try and, you know, self-soothe the grief.
But again, that's a process, isn't it? Like,
it's a process, you know, that might be part of the process mm. for you, you know, maybe longer process for you.
Yeah.
So it's a very complicated journey.
And there's no shame in that. I just want to say, like, if you do end up in that position, like,
yeah.
you know, just maybe allow yourself to work through it. Don't berate yourself. And sometimes I think it's easy to look at others who have created services to help others and think, oh, why can't I be like that?
Absolutely.
And I think this is where that earlier trauma comes mm. in too, because oftentimes those earlier traumatic memories and how we feel about them guide us in how do we process new ones? How do we experience new kinds of trauma and grief? And so, you know, if we have learned and what helped us in before was to try to dim the emotions of it, then that makes sense that that's what we're going to do again. And if we learned that as a child and now as an adult, we can dim those emotions through alcohol and drugs, like that makes total sense to me that that might be what somebody does. So I think that building block of our own history and our own context also is a way of guiding us through what we experience in our present.
And I think the other part is, if something happens as in relationship breakdown or alcohol and drugs, or, you know, there's this spiraling, it's that you are human and what has happened is not your fault, that you didn't ask for these things to happen to you and you are trying to find your best way through. Yeah. And some of those ways may not be healthy, but you don't have, it's just about being compassionate to yourself and your situation.
Yeah. And it's about a support network, I think. Like if you don't have a huge support network of people who are understanding, then, you know, you could end up in that position. Whereas some people probably have different types of support networks. So it's comparison, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. I also think that length of time isn't necessarily the best way of looking at it as a process, or looking at it as like, oh, it's too long and so you need help at this point. Mm. Because I think if you are in the middle of a really acute traumatic reaction, I don't think you have the luxury of waiting 6 months or a year before you get relief from that. You are entitled and deserve to have relief from that as soon as you need relief. I would say that, you know, it is, when does that interfere with your daily life? Yeah. When do you need relief from it versus looking at it as, well, a certain amount of time has to go.
Yeah. No, I think that's really important to say, but so you've kind of said it there. It's like, how is it affecting my life? Because I think that's where people maybe struggle. It's like, when am I allowed to get help? Is it a time frame? Is it how bad I feel? I think people really struggle with that. They really struggle with, when am I allowed to go and get help? When is it bad enough?
But there's also as well, like, how long can I have help for? Because some people go like, oh, you know, it's been 18 months. Like, why aren't you past this now? Like, what's wrong with you? So then that creates feelings of being ashamed for needing help for a longer period of time as well.
What I tend to tell the people that I work with, so I always feel really blessed when I get referred someone who is working on discerning what choice to make, because then I get to kind of be in it with them from the beginning. But oftentimes I'll have people that will call me up 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 month, 2 months, 6 months post-termination. And it's fine. Like, we can work at whatever kind of point. Where I always feel badly is when somebody waits. It's like, you had to suffer so much.
Yeah.
And you know, you might have gotten a little bit more relief previously, but I don't judge somebody for that. It just, you know, it's that sense of compassion that comes out. And I have the best example that happened yesterday with one of my clients who had terminated and is in the middle of a subsequent pregnancy. And we were doing the work that we're doing, and we're almost through the EMDR we need to do for her termination, which is really awesome. And she was asking me after it, she's like, well, you know, how do I know that this works or not? And we're just sort of talking. And I said, you know how I know this works? And she's like, what? I said, you didn't bring up Texas. She's like, oh yeah, that's horrible what happened. I go, yeah, it really is, right? But that's not what you started our meeting with today. Because you are able to separate out your trauma from this event that happened. And you didn't feel that Texas was happening to you, but you are able to separate it out and have it be like, that is an awful thing over there. And that awful thing is different from the awful thing that I experienced. And being able to frame it for her just in that kind of example was, I think, a really empowering experience of like, oh, wow, yeah, I have come really far, that a law that's passing in my country isn't triggering me, that I am not getting activated. My emotions and my trauma is not getting activated because of something that's way outside of my control. So that's huge.
So, okay. So since we've brought Texas into this,
sorry,
that's okay. But I think let's talk about it in the context of the sort of trauma and being re-traumatized. So let's say that's great. Your client is not being re-traumatized. What if somebody is? So what if somebody right now, somebody's listening to this and has been really triggered by what is happening in Texas? What would you say to them?
I would say that it makes sense that you're being triggered and it's okay to ask for some help, because obviously what is happening is your past is being impacted by the present. And that's how we know that trauma is still active, is when our past trauma interferes with our present life.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can really start to undermine, can't it?
Yes.
I mean, it could really start to spiral.
Yes. Yes.
So don't wait.
Yeah,
don't
you
wait
don't
is
need
what you're
to
saying.
Wait.
Yeah.
That you deserve to not wait. I think that's the piece I really want to come out, because people tend to feel like they don't deserve therapy or that they deserve this really bad thing that happened to them. And thus they deserve to feel all of the things they need to feel as a result of it. And I'd say, well, actually, that sounds to me like you have some trauma being activated and you deserve relief.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, do you think, because there's little things I see sometimes that go, oh, like you've been kicked in the stomach, and they obviously are activating some kind of feeling, some past trauma. But if you just be able to move on without dwelling on them, would you say that you've obviously dealt with them pretty well?
Well, that's then not having your past impact your present, right? You're allowed to have feelings about things. I'm not saying you can't have feelings about things. I was pretty angry about what happened in Texas, but it didn't reactivate my trauma. I was still able to go about my day. I was still able to be there for my clients. I was still able to put it to the side mostly without it activating my own trauma. I mean, it was activating my advocacy, but it wasn't activating my trauma.
Yeah.
And that's the piece that's different. Like, activating my advocacy feels really healthy because it's something I can do versus paralyzing me because it's activating my trauma. And now I'm back in a loop of feeling like what happened to me over a decade ago is happening in the here and now. And it's not.
Yeah. I guess it's quite healthy to acknowledge that. I was just like, for reference, I was away with Jacob and with my mom, and I saw an older man with Down syndrome with his mom. And that just brought up all sorts of feelings, and
of
I just
course.
Could not stop staring at them. And I was just couldn't take my eyes off him at all. Just wondering, and all these memories coming up of what would have been. And I did dwell on it for probably about an hour or so. And then I have occasionally thought about it since, but I guess for it's healthy to acknowledge that and how you do feel.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, if it got in the way of what you needed to do in that moment, I'd say, okay, maybe there's something unfinished there that could be really useful to try to process through. But it also makes sense to look at it as like, ooh, that's how a future version of my life in the Twilight Zone could have looked. And like, ooh, wow. Like, what is the compassion I have? What's the empathy I have? What's the fear that I have around seeing that versus imagining it? Because it's different to imagine it versus to see it, to have it in the concrete.
And you do wonder, because you think, were they on the high functioning end? You know, he looked, I hate this word, normal, but you know, I watched a program, I think it was like a children's hospital thing, and I had to turn it off because there was a little girl with Down syndrome who was very, very sick.
Yeah.
And that's what you don't see.
Yeah, as well, so, I know.
Yeah.
So there's also like little re-traumatizing things that come up through daily life as well.
Absolutely. Those are what I call activation points, right? Mm-hmm. Like, those are the things that can potentially activate our trauma. And depending upon what our relationship with our trauma is, depends upon how much power those activation points can have in our present.
Yeah.
So Julie, so on that, so if we're kind of, because I mean, this is my personal belief. I believe this is something that I will be kind of, you know, will be with me for the rest of my life. And I will, because I guess I believe that my relationship to it changes as I change through life. So that's how I sort of view it. So post-traumatic growth, is this something that kind of always changes with us as well? Because if we're getting these sort of reactivation points, or if it's slightly changing as we change and grow, you know, something might crop up next week or tomorrow that I'm not really aware of that is part of maybe the trauma that I've experienced with my TFMR. But it comes up tomorrow, but that doesn't sort of wipe out all my post-traumatic growth that I've done.
Correct.
It's just part of this wider process.
So I think maybe to answer your question, Haley, is that post-traumatic growth is not one thing. It's not like we get to a point and this thing happens and there's our post-traumatic growth and we're done. Post-traumatic growth can keep on happening. So like, if you think about it as like a field of wildflowers, right? Every year you might see different wildflowers because of whatever the cross-pollination that has happened from that previous year. And so I think that's a good metaphor when we're looking at post-traumatic growth. Like, it's still a field of wildflowers, but it might look different year in and year out because of the different pollination that might have happened. So the different growth, the different connections that you make, the different experiences that you have. I look at all of our experiences and memories are like a very intricate tapestry that gets woven together strand by strand. And at the moment of a termination for medical reasons, it feels like those strands are the center focal point of the tapestry. And as time passes, we weave in more strands, perhaps with different elements of post-traumatic growth or different experiences, so that whatever those strands were of the TFMR are still there, but they're no longer the focal point. They don't have to hold center stage of it, but they're still embedded in the tapestry, and they are the strands that help to make the tapestry full and lush and strong, but they're not the only parts of it that you see.
So you're not defined solely by this event.
You don't have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that. I think that maybe that's a good place to come to our TFMR takeaways. So every episode, we ask the same question of our guests. And the question is, what advice or piece of hope would you give to women or families who are either facing a TFMR or who have undergone a TFMR?
So I would like to remind people that feelings come and go, and that's normal. And whatever your feelings have, they don't have to impact the relationships that you have. So whether that's the relationship with your baby that you've lost, being happy doesn't mean that it negates the relationship that you have. Grieving doesn't negate the strength of the relationship that you have either. Like, it's not that, oh, well, if I grieve it, that's the only way I can be in relation to the baby. It's one way, but it's not the only way. So the idea that it's okay to have feelings come and go and not to make too much meaning of those feelings. And then I think too, the idea of we deserve to be able to move through our trauma and not to allow it to be stuck so that it serves as a future activation point and so that it keeps on coming up for us. So we deserve to give ourselves the opportunity, the best opportunities we can to grow.
And deserve is a very powerful word, I think, that we all need to listen to and take heed. But thank you, Julie. That was really interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed it. Let us know by messaging us over on our socials, Facebook and Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR and Twitter at Talk TFMR.
You can also subscribe to our podcast via Podbean, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to make sure you get all of our episodes as soon as they are published.
So that's it for this time. Thank you so much. And please take gentle care of yourselves.
Thank you. Bye-bye.